This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Hope you all enjoyed week one. Hopefully have some winners in your back pocket. I know I'll be honest on this podcast, we're a little bit of a mixed bag from your boy here. We had some early week winners. UL Monroe was able to get there, albeit very painfully, and we'll actually discuss that to close out the show. The under in Notre Dame, Miami got a little squirrely at the end, but got there, but certainly some plays that I regret, and boy, we will get into Alabama here in just a moment. As always, you could tweet me, I'm at one Tim Murray, and I know we've opened up the podcast thanking you guys over the past couple of weeks. Last week, I got to be honest, it was one of the more incredible sights to see the rise of this podcast and the iTunes rankings. We got as high as 72nd. I mean, there were some big boy podcasts behind us. So it's just a testament to all of you guys to be as loyal as you've been. And we've had, thankfully, some great guests. We'll have regulars all year long. We've got some news on that I'm going to tell you about here in just a moment. I know the Thursday podcast, I saw the numbers on YouTube, just outrageous. So it was a really gratifying week. I wish I went 5-0. That would have been a lot better to come back after seeing those numbers explode a week ago. So first week of the college football season, clearly there was a lot of enthusiasm, but the OGs that have been with this podcast for as long as they have been, or just the newbies, I don't care. Welcome. We are with you three times a week here on this feed, and tell everyone that we will be with you. A unique show today. Adam Burke is out. He was unavailable to record on Tuesday. I wanted to wait till Tuesday because of the game last night where North Carolina, it was good until it wasn't, against TCU. And shout out to TCU's football Twitter feed. They are having a good old time here today and late last night. Colby Dant is going to pinch hit today. Always love catching up with Colby. I know he's a fan favorite at VSiN and a very astute college football mind. So we'll talk to Colby here in just a little bit of a recap of the week that was, some updates. I will give you a breakdown of my trip to Miami and what I took away from that game, a very impressive victory. Shout out to Matt. He was on the Canes plus the three. I know a bunch of folks were on Miami plus the points. Thankfully, the undercashed numbers matter, right? It closed 51.5. But it got as low as, what, 49, 49 and a half. So a middle opportunity. And I think that was one of the big takeaways of week one. Numbers do matter. You think about a bunch of these games, some of these FBS, FCS games, the numbers all rose up, or not all rose up, but some of them rose up and middle opportunities were out there. I did want to give a shout out because I go down to the Miami game and I get a DM from a loyal listener of the podcast, Mason, and we were trying to figure out where we could meet up. And I'll be honest, our seats, me and my dad, were way up in the 300 section. So I let him know, hey, we're running a little late. We'll be there before kickoff, but we're up in the 300s. He was only a couple sections over. I appreciate him and his wife waiting. You guys didn't miss any of the game, thankfully. And it was great to meet a loyal listener to the podcast. So shout out to Mason. Appreciate you reaching out. And I did apologize to him. I was like, ugh, that Virginia Tech bet. Really thought we were going to get there. Did not ultimately get there. But I do want to just jump into the four teams that lost in week one that are top 10 teams. And I put out a Twitter poll, just the team that you feel like you still believe in, still can make a run. And as of early Tuesday morning, had about 500 plus votes on this at one Tim Murray. 38% of you still had confidence in Texas, 35% on Notre Dame, 22% on Clemson, and not much on Alabama, around 4% on Alabama. And look, as of right now at DraftKings, the only team that is an underdog to make the playoff is Alabama of those four. Texas minus $2, Notre Dame minus 130. Clemson minus 130 as well. Notre Dame, Miami. I was there and, you know, be where we were, to be honest, it probably would have been better from a watching standpoint to be at the game. What I liked about Miami, Dude, Malachi Toney, this kid is an absolute superstar in the making. And I know all of you know by now, just 17 years old, this kid was wildly impressive. And, you know, I was going back and forth with Sammy Panayotovich, who has a newsletter now, and I contributed to it, giving him some thoughts on this Notre Dame-Miami matchup. And, you know, I played up the other side a little bit. I did not have a bet on Notre Dame or Miami on the side. As mentioned, I had the under, which thankfully we got it at 53.5. I think we talked about it on the podcast at 54.5. It does come home. I think it closed 51.5. So there was a little bit of middle opportunity out there for that game. But this kid, Malachi Toney, man, he is impressive to watch. And I had questions about Miami's wide receivers and how effective they would be against what I expect and still expect to be a very good secondary for Notre Dame. And Malachi Toney was a beast. 6 catches, 82 yards. That first touchdown was a thing of beauty. Very good performance from Carson Beck. And, you know, I'll say this, all summer long, we talked a lot about all of the quarterbacks and what type of year it's going to be for quarterback play. And I really felt like Carson Beck was being slept on. And we talked about it, and I know I've referenced it a bunch. David Hale had that article. He joined us on the podcast, I think back in May, looking at some of the blind resume numbers for Carson Beck. And it really wasn't that uninspiring, right? It was pretty decent. He put him up against Garrett Nussmeier. I had questions, though, about Miami's wide receivers and how they would play on Sunday night. But they answered the bell. And CJ Daniels, obviously he makes the impeccable catch, the one-handed catch. But CJ Daniels was very strong in that game. You know, plays 4 years at Liberty, doesn't even catch a touchdown a year ago at LSU, and then he makes the catch of the weekend. Now, I'll say this on the flip side. As a Notre Dame fan, I was very disappointed in that play on two fronts. Leonard Moore is one of the best corners in the country, and he got beaten on a double move by CJ Daniels. And then Adon Shuler kind of got caught in no man's land when it's easy for me to say watching from the stands, but you've got this fluttering ball, really not a great pass by Carson Beck. It was a dangerous pass in the red zone. And it felt like Adon Shuler's eyes got big and said, I'm going to get an interception here. This is going to be a game-changing play. And then CJ Daniels makes the catch with one hand. And that was a game-changing play. It was an amazing catch by Daniels. And I thought Adon Shuler could have either been more aggressive, played the ball, or just absolutely smashed him in the ribs. And you get an incomplete pass there. But Miami's line's very impressive all throughout the game, as you would expect from Mario Cristobal. Reuben Bain, as good as advertised. The offensive line, very strong. Corey Heatherman, it's just one game. Looks like you found a very good defensive coordinator. Last year's defense was an absolute abomination. One of the critiques I would say about Miami, and I'm sure anyone who has Miami tickets, you're feeling good right now, as you should. This team is loaded. Very impressive talent-wise. I was impressed by the running backs. You lose Damian Martinez. I thought Mark Fletcher Jr. stepped up and played quite well. The transfer in Brown, I thought, played well. The transfer from North Dakota State. So, you know, I thought all in all, Miami was the better team, and I tweeted out that for sure. They were the better team. Notre Dame took advantage on a bust late in the fourth quarter. CJ Carr connection to Eli Raritan. They're able to score a little bit later. But my question would be, and my concern would be, Mario Cristobal tried to do it again. And they got very, very complacent on that final drive, the game-winning field goal from Carter Davis. Nailed it, perfect kick. But you're going to sit back and wait on a kid who went 2 of 7 a year ago from Florida Atlantic and went 0-for-4? From 40 yards and inside a year ago, but he nailed it. Look, I'm not at practice. Mario Cristobal is, but that was a little like, really? You're going to wait and kick this field goal? But Miami, right team won. As for Notre Dame, hashtag drink. disappointed in Mike Denbrock's play calling. You got to give the ball to Jeremiah Love. You just got to give him to him more. He's got to have more touches. Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price, 16 carries for 78 yards. I know it's easy for us to say, as people who sit on the couch and watch these games, you got to do this, you got to do that. But when you've got a first-round talent at wide receiver and a quarterback making his first career start, you just got to give him the ball more. And Jadarian Price, he fumbled the ball at the goal line. They avoided disaster. CJ Carr pounced on that fumble, and I believe they scored a touchdown. Yeah, a touchdown later on that drive. But you got to give the ball to them more. CJ Carr had more carries than Jeremiah Love. Like, that can't happen. It just cannot happen. So we'll see. Notre Dame has a couple weeks off for a must win now against Texas A&M. Is this Notre Dame team a playoff team? I think they're capable of it. I was a bit disappointed in the offensive line. I think this team really misses Charles Jagasaw, the player who, you know, broke his arm in an ATV accident during the offseason. We're not sure exactly when he's going to be back. Chris Ash is not Al Golden. And I think what you can take a step back at, if you're looking at it from the Notre Dame side, Miami's going to be the best team, in my opinion, that they play all year. They play Texas A&M in a couple weeks, but they get that game in South Bend. They play USC. They put up a 73 spot on Missouri State. Maybe USC is going to be better this year, but they get that game in South Bend. That is the toughest environment and the most challenging game they're going to play all year. They do play Arkansas, and maybe that'll be a tricky environment, but it'll be an 11 a.m. game. Good environment, a lot of orange. Kudos to the Miami fans. I thought they did a really good job. I really did. So, fun game, I guess, to be at. I love college football. I thought the Miami fans showed up and showed out and did a good job. Now, the question is, all right, continue to be there all year long. So we will see how ultimately that continues there. A couple other thoughts before we get to Colby here. It looks like I was dead wrong on Alabama, man. I'm not going to go ask for a refund, but this is a team that, you know, I'll tap the chest. I picked them, I think, in the guide to win the national championship, trying to be a little bit different. I felt like they were underrated coming into this year, despite being a top 10 team. I did lay minus 180 on them to make the playoff. I paired them up with the Bills in a cross-sport parlay. Kalen DeBoer, man, and my tweet kind of took off like wildfire over the weekend. Where now in 14 games as the head coach of Alabama, the Crimson Tide have now lost 4 games as a 14-point or more favorite. And that game was not competitive. Like, I know that late in the game, Alabama had a chance. It was 24-17. They had the ball. Florida State dominated that game. And credit to Gus Malzahn. Credit to Tony White on that defense. Credit to Mike Norvell, bringing in the right pieces. Thomas Castellanos looks pretty darn impressive, right, as a mobile quarterback. But good God, that was something to keep an eye on there. Not that impressive. Couple other nuggets for me that I was impressed by. South Carolina just has a couple freakazoids on their team, like Nicholas Harbor. I guess he's going by just Nick now. That should have been a touchdown catch. He's an absolute freak. Dylan Stewart, freak. Lenora Sellers, impressive. Still not all in on South Carolina, but Virginia Tech, I was disappointed. That offense was very, very questionable at best. How about the Utah Utes? My Utes, 6-1 to win the conference, was one of the bets I put in over the summer. Saw a little bit of movement there. Devin Dampier, JVT out there. You and I, our guy, Devin Dampier, very impressive there in that performance. And quarterback injury is something to keep an eye on here. Army gets upset by Tarleton State. We talked about this game on the Thursday podcast, I think, with Humans. And I said, I would love to take the points with Tarleton State, but I hated the situation, right? Short week traveling from Portland State to West Point, and they get the win in double overtime. Post-game win expectancy, according to Bill Conley, SP Plus, was only 33%. But hell, that's an incredible win for Tarleton State and Army under 7.5, something that Todd Furman talked about on Wednesday's podcast. Wes Reynolds over the summer talked about it as well. Off to a good start as they lose an FCS game, but they go out to the Little Apple, and we got to keep our eyes on Dewayne Coleman, their quarterback. Also, hate to see this, and the market as we're recording is going bonkers, as Hawaii could be without Micah Elejado. I don't know if there's any official news, but the market is moving as if he's not going to play. We will see. He did play against in the game against Arizona, but he is at practice on Tuesday in a walking boot, and that is not a good sight for the Rainbow Warriors. So, yikes, that is not what you want to see. So, Micah Elejado in a walking boot, and that number right now, Hawaii -7, just got hit. So, that was up at 9.5, down to 7. We'll see. But Micah Elejado at practice on Tuesday wearing a walking boot. Not ideal. And man, I know it's easy to say now, revisionist history. I don't think he should have played against Arizona. Should have kept him, you know, and protected him there, but we will see. But that is an injury to keep an eye on, as he is not participating in practice at a walking boot with visuals on it. So we will see how this ultimately plays out, if he's able to play on Saturday in a game against Sam Houston. Sam Houston could be potentially changing quarterbacks too. Something to keep an eye on there, but money on the Bearcats with a K on this Tuesday morning. Tomorrow, little news here for all of you. We will continue Wednesdays with Wes Reynolds, but we are adding someone else to the fold on Wednesdays. Brett Ciancia. Yes. Pick Six Previews. We're going to have a weekly Wednesday segment with him. He has got a new thing on his website, Pick Six Plus, doing updated statistics all season long. So every Wednesday now, we will be joined by Brett Ciancia. So looking forward to that, and he will be a part of our Wednesday podcast. So it'll be Wednesdays with Wes, and also Wednesdays with Brett, working name there. All right. On the other side of the break, we are going to talk to Colby Dant. He's going to be joining the show. Just a reminder, this broadcast of VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast is brought to you by our friends at Rainbow Authentics, the official source of game-used apparel, autographs, and trading cards from your favorite University of Hawaii student athlete. Beyond memorabilia, Rainbow Authentics is committed to supporting the community. Their mission is rooted in empowering student athletes and coaches, strengthening local programs, and giving back to Hawaii with pride. They've got exclusive custom gear. Rainbow Authentics also makes sure you look your best every game day. I'm wearing my Rainbow Authentics hat right now. So go on over to rainbowauthentics.com. Mahalo to our friends at Rainbow Authentics, a proud sponsor of VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast. Quick break. Colby Dant on the other side. He was at North Carolina TCU. We'll get his impressions on Chapel Bill in his debut. And boy, that was something. We'll talk about that on the other side.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
And as promised, pinch hitting this week, and excited to catch up with Colby Dant, friend of the program, friend of VSiN. You could follow him on social media at the Colby D College Experience, part of the Sports Gambling Podcast Empire, and of course, part of the SGP live program every Friday night on VSiN. We got to start right with it. I was in attendance at Notre Dame Miami. I opened the show talking a little bit about it. You were in attendance at the spectacle of all spectacles, North Carolina and TCU. And my God, were the tweets glorious after that opening drive touchdown. This is going to be easy. National championship until 41 unanswered was scored by TCU. So give us the lowdown, your takeaways from being there in Chapel Bill on Monday night.
Oh, boy. Well, first, thanks for having me on the show. It's always great to catch up, Tim. You do a great job with this podcast. And, You know, first, I'll give credit to the Carolina faithful, because that thing pregame, I have never seen Chapel Hill looking like that. Maybe basketball, for basketball, something like that. But for a football game, they went the distance. So, you know, excitement was just in the air everywhere. And you know, just we were there for a couple of hours before the game, and just the amount of excitement of people saying, hey, this is, you know, I can't believe we're going all in on football. And then the opening drive, we're like, unbelievable. We're like, wow, there's just every play. I think they had one play that was like a loss of three, but every other play was pretty much like 7 yards or more, I feel like. And you score that touchdown, and they show Michael Jordan up, you know, with Roy Williams up in the box, and the crowd is going insane. And then, you know, it was funny. I was sitting in front of a guy that basically was like, I would compare him to like the Ultimate Warrior. He was wearing the Carolina, you know, like have these schools have the overalls that are picked out in their colors. He was wearing that, and he was just coming at we were on the TCU side. We're in like second row. And just coming at TCU, and he was calling out Josh Hoover, saying, you're not good enough to play for Texas and Texas A&M. And then Josh Hoover had something to say about that. But I could not believe they scored 41 unanswered. And the scene was unbelievably deflating. Everyone left by the third quarter. I mean, like mid-third quarter, I think, is when everyone checked out. And it was, you could almost, I mean, you could hear a pin drop in that thing. Like, with the exception of the few TCU fans that traveled, it was unbelievable in a way. The, you know, and I took a shuttle to my car, so I jumped in the shuttle, and man, everybody, that thing was just so quiet. And you know, there was a few snippets of Fire Bill Belichick, believe it or not.
Oh, gotta love it. You know, and it's funny now. So you look at the adjustments, and that's one of the things I wanted to talk to you about. Week one to week two, overreactions, how do we play them? You know, for example, week zero to week one, the overreaction on UNLV, and you were able to cover that number with ease. You look at this UNC Charlotte line, and this thing at some shops right now here on this Tuesday morning as we record is down at 13.5. The number earlier before the game was up at 21. So as you think back to what you saw last night, is there anything to salvage from this UNC thing? Is this going to be, in your opinion, a complete disaster, or are we going to overreact a little bit to just a nightmare performance in the season opener?
Yeah, you know, I was one that jumped on UNLV last week, and UNLV's roster, I think, though, you can circle the guys that you think, okay, this was a nice get. Calandria in Mullen's system, I thought, was a nice fit the second he grabbed him. But this one was tricky. I'm assuming they're going to start Max Johnson next week, just based off of the fact he comes in, you know, Brad Johnson's son, 9 of 11, 103 yards. I know it was at garbage time. But, I mean, ESPN had that tracker going, from what I understand. I watched a little bit of the game again when I came home this morning on, you know, Lopez basically didn't complete a pass for like a good amount of time after that first drive. So maybe the offense will look a little bit better if you go with Max Johnson, a guy that started many games in college football. Remember, Lopez was only a starter last year. So, and that was on the group of five level. Max Johnson's got starts at what, LSU and A&M. So maybe you go to that, but I'm a little concerned about the talent, you know, like just the certain numbers, you know, that have been tweeted out that, you know, I'm very concerned in that regard. But now Charlotte, on the other hand, though, I took App State. I couldn't believe that line movement, you know, was going down close to kickoff. Made me actually ponder what am I missing? Tim Auburn's a good coach, but man, they look like a complete mess too. So that game, I think, is a little trickier than the UNLV Sam Houston, but I do tend to think I would probably jump on the Tar Heels, because I think that'll probably be a pro UNC crowd, and I expect the humiliation from week one to be such an X factor, and I do fully expect Max Johnson. I mean, I'm curious, asking you, do you think Lopez will start next week?
Look, I was just surprised that they went all in on Gio Lopez. Like, you know, he was not, as you pointed out, like, yeah, he was a good G5 quarterback, but now that Max Johnson, great story to see him back, right? You know, that is certainly something to just be excited about. And then, I think you gotta see what you've got there, Max Johnson. To your point, like it was mop up duty. You know, the quarterbacks in week one, and I talked about it, felt like all summer long, Colby was like, "Hey, this is going to be fascinating. All these quarterbacks, who's going to hit?" And we could certainly dive into the performances we saw from, you know, Arch Manning and Ty Simpson and Julian Sayin. But I want to go to a guy that I know jumped out to you. And it's funny because you mentioned the line move in that App State Charlotte game. And I think it's science. I'm pretty sure it is. It's confirmed by scientists. When you bet a game and the line moves in your favor, meaning you get great CLV, maybe you'll come home. But when you bet a game and the line goes against you, Colby, that's a guaranteed loser 100% of the time. You're fucked. And that's what happened with me. I bet Oregon State. And as soon as that line started to move, I'm like, yep, we're in trouble here. And I watched that game in the airport before jumping on my flight to go down to Miami. And I'll say this, man, Cal was impressive. And can we just call him JKS, or do we have to try to Sagapuludi? Can we just call him JKS?
I think Jaron
Kiwi Sagapuludi.
And he is phenomenal.
He's really good. Very impressive. You know, all kidding aside, very impressive. And I'm curious to hear what Stormy has to say this week on money moves, because she was on the sidelines of that game. So she probably, I know she talked to, you know, Wilcox and the coaches on Cal. I got to imagine they were glowing about this young man. And he was a 5-star recruit and he showed it, man. That was a very impressive performance by Cal. They dominated that game. That was eye-opening to me, because, Colby, I don't know where you were from a preseason standpoint on Cal, but it felt like the two Bay Area teams, everybody was out on them. And I was definitely accurate on Stanford, but I think I was wrong on Cal. I thought they lost too much, and this team is pretty impressive, at least in week one, in that performance against Oregon State.
Yeah, you know, I was on Cal, and I took the over on them, but a lot of it had to do with – I had the benefit. Well, I have a rapport with Nick Rolovich, who's on their staff now. Sure. And then I was at ACC Media Days, and I got to talk to Justin Wilcox. And you know, I had seen stories that like Wilcox and Rivera were at odds, and I found that to be not the case when talking to both of them. So I tend to thought like that coaching staff with Brian Harsin too, I think is a good coach. I thought he got a raw deal at Auburn. I just was like, that coaching staff, I believe in. I think Nick Rolovich should be a head coach, because I think he's really smart, especially when it comes to quarterbacks. That's why I wasn't panicking when we thought Devin Brown, ACC Media Days, Devin Brown came there, the former 5-star from Ohio State. And, you know, he spoke. So I was like, okay, it's going to be Devin Brown, probably going to be their starter. But then when they named him that, and I had kind of messaged Rolo a couple times and I felt like, you know, I didn't really gain any intel, but I just trust when that news was broken, mm-hmm, that he is so good at the quarterback position. Do you remember when he took over for Hawaii? Like Norm Chow, I believe, was the previous coach. Huh. He instantly took a bad team and made it really good, you know, for their standards in the Mountain West. I kind of just was like, okay, well, I had heard about this kid before. He's from Hawaii, which obviously Rolovich has a history with. And then the fact they flipped him from Oregon, I had heard that he was a stud. So I loaded up on Cal there. Now, I was a little concerned about all the transfers, but I just thought their schedule was incredibly kind. So I took the over, and I thought there was value on that just because the coaching staff. I thought, like, I trust these guys. Wilcox knows defense, and that is a far trip. I still think we're learning about these. The, you know, the three time zone thing, you see it such a factor in the NFL. So we've only had 1 year of data with the Big Ten and ACC with these teams way out west and then, you know, coming back. So I took the over on Cal.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see how this schedule plays out. They have an FCS opponent this week against Texas Southern, and then late night game against Minnesota could be a fun one. See what number we get if we're still in on Cal then. And then a trip down to San Diego State, who The betting market likes San Diego State this week. They've bet them down from, I think, as high as a 6-point dog now to 1.5 as that squad. I'm curious. We'll just kind of go all over the place. San Diego State, they play Stony Brook week one. I think they shut them out. And, you know, this is a San Diego State team. I did not talk to Sean Lewis when media days were taking place at Circa. I'm curious if you did, because I was texting with John Schaefer, who's the voice of San Diego State. And he said, you know, it's hard to fully take away from an FCS opponent. That being said, last year they struggled against an FCS opponent. And this year, 11 starters back on defense. So we love the late night action. This is the 10:15 game on Saturday night up at the Palouse. San Diego State getting some love in the betting market, at least early on against Washington State here.
Yeah, and you know, I did briefly get a chance to talk to Sean Lewis, but you know, I think he was excited about getting Denegal, the Michigan transfer, at the quarterback spot, and just thought they returned, I think, 10 of 11 on defense. And I think that was a big point of emphasis for them, is just the fact that everyone knows the systems a lot better and just returning that much production. But the big thing for me, and I have not got an answer on this one yet, so I'm searching, scouring the internet, is why Washington State, we thought they were going to start Zevi Ekhos.
Yeah, where is he? He didn't play.
He was, and they played the backup. So I'm saying the backup to the backup. So I don't know if he violated some team rules. I don't know what happened, because they played two quarterbacks in the Battle of the Palouse against Idaho, and they barely got out of that thing. But Ekhos was a guy that flourished in the bowl game. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand last year, that thing was neck and neck with him and Mateer. So that's big news to me. Like, I need to know if Ekhos is playing. If Ekhos is playing, I tend to think Wazoo's offense will be much better than what we saw this past Saturday. But I still don't know what essentially happened that had him not even on the field. And I was searching, scouring the internet, trying to find if he, you know, what
I'll
was
read
the
some. Let me read some quotes here, Colby. This is from Jimmy Rogers, new head coach up there in Pullman. This is from 247 Sports, Washington State site, CougFan.com. So what happened with Zevi Ekhos? It's a question Coug Nation has been asking since Saturday, when Jackson Potter won the starting QB job. There were other pressing questions after the narrow. Remember, they beat Idaho 13-10, and that's an Idaho program that lost their whole coaching staff to New Mexico. This is what Rogers said, quote, "Zevi's a great person, great leader, speaker on this team. He's got a great connection with everyone on the team. It was a really close race. It wasn't really what Zevi isn't. It's just more so what Potter was doing right. It's been a battle. It will continue to be a battle, because that's what competition is at practice. Zevi is preparing like he's going to play every game. And that was the kind of my push for him, is you define your circumstance. Don't let the circumstance define you." But to your point, they didn't, I don't know. This is very odd to see that. And Washington State just a 3-point win in that opener.
Especially because Duggar came in at one point in that game, the third, what I would assume would have been the third string if you pick up a Phil Steele magazine or something. So, it's something. I'll tell you this: if they don't have Ekhos, I like San Diego State, because I watched that whole game against Idaho, and that offense did not do much. And Tim, to push back to another thing, or to go back to another thing, is, you know, I wonder if UNC fans are wondering, you know, Ryan Brown was at North Carolina for the spring semester, Purdue transfer. He went there for a semester, and he got mad apparently when they went out and got Gio Lopez and hit the portal back to Purdue. He looked pretty good on Saturday against Ball State. I think he threw for over 300. I mean, that's another factor I think that probably should be brought up with Chapel Bill there.
Yep, Ryan Brown, as you pointed out, 31-0 victory for Barry Odom's squad there, as I think they play an FCS squad this week. But yeah, Ryan Brown, 311 yards, 2 touchdowns in his resurgence, I guess, there at Purdue. As we look kind of big picture wise, we saw 4 top 10 teams go down. I mentioned in the open the Alabama performance, lack thereof. Thomas Castellanos, very, very impressive. Kind of big picture before we spin it ahead to you, Colby, what was the thing that, I don't know if it was surprised or excited you. What jumped out to you from week one is we try not to overreact, but we also try to take from week one and say, all right, this is what is likely to come here moving forward.
The first thing I would say is, like, you know, don't panic at the you saw that, you know, CJ Carr. Yeah, I know you were there for that game. You saw, you know, him struggle a little bit, but Miami's going to have a good defense, I think, this year. I think we, you know, I think we can all be convinced of that with their DC hire coming over from Minnesota. Arch Manning as well. You know, I know the Twitter universe enjoyed his misery there, but I'm not going to panic. You know, you played maybe the best, you know, one of the best defenses in the country on the road, and that was part of the reason why I took Ohio State. But you saw it all over the place, with the exception of the Cal quarterback, the youth at the quarterback spot, Ty Simpson. I know he's been in Tuscaloosa for a while, but this guy hasn't started many games. And at moments, it looked like it. He was holding onto the ball a little bit late, you know. So that is in the unders. How about that? The defense is just way ahead of the offenses. And that's something that I think, you know, my brother, he hosts the show with me here, the College Football Experience. And he made a point of talking about that too, saying there's more players ever in the transfer portal, right, than we've seen ever in the history of college football. Even though we think the portal wasn't as good talent wise, there's still more players than ever, which is probably adding into the fact of why the defense, obviously there's no preseason, but also the fact that you're throwing together these rosters, you don't know what to expect. You take a look at Florida State, which I think was the biggest headline this past weekend. I remember at ACC Media Days, I asked their beat writer, what do you think of their team? This is someone that watches their practices. He's like, I don't know what to expect. And he had it penciled in that they were going to be starting 11 transfers on offense, 11 transfers on defense with a new OC and a new DC. Now, they ended up only starting 10 on offense because they started a freshman. But still, I mean, it's very hard to gather, you know, ahead of time in the preseason there. But I would think that was one of the biggest headlines there, is just the defense is just drastically ahead of the offenses. And but the biggest story to me was Florida State. That one was just unbelievable. I had Alabama in the national championship, Tim.
Huh.
You know, that's one where I'm just – and
Colby, I laugh because I was right there with you, man. And, you know, I said on our preview show on Thursday, I wasn't going to bet it. I was mad at myself because on Saturday on the College Football Tailgate show, little promo here, 9 a.m. Eastern time. Make sure to check that out every Saturday. And I always play a game with Chuck Esposito from Stations Casino here in Las Vegas, trying to predict the most one-sided ticket count of the weekend. And I predicted it right. It was Alabama. Everybody was on Alabama. And normally that's an indicator to me, Colby, all right, let's go take Florida State. And I didn't, because I really believed in this Alabama team. And I felt like I spent all offseason defending Kalen DeBoer and the return of Ryan Grubb, and the defense is going to be nasty. Look, you can, you know, talk about the Texas performance. You could talk about Clemson. You could talk about Notre Dame, all top 10 teams that lost. There's no denying the most disappointing performance of those four teams was Alabama. I mean, they got absolutely boat raced in this game, and it really wasn't all that competitive. And, you know, give some credit to Castellanos, man. Like, that dude talked shit and then backed it up. He was impressive to watch for sure. You know, I'd be curious. We're not going to know, Colby, what Florida State is until what, the end of September. Virginia looked pretty decent in their season opening domination of Coastal Carolina. Then they play Miami. I think we'll know pretty well what Florida State is early October, because you've got back-to-back games on the road at Virginia and then Miami. Because the next two games, you've got an FCS team this week and then Kent State, who basically is an FCS program. So, yeah, very impressive, though. I think you got to give them their due, no doubt, to go in there and dominate like they did.
And they're plus 1,100 right now to win the ACC. And this is one thing I said when we were previewing Florida State on my show was, you know, I don't know what that team would look like. This is back in July or something. And I was like, but that schedule, I had it ranked as the second easiest conference schedule. Now, the non-con obviously was challenging with Florida and Alabama, but...
And Miami. And Miami's conference, sorry.
Yeah. But watching that, I got flashbacks of Nick Marshall at Auburn. Gus Malzahn in this offense. How about the speed of the speed of Jalen Lucas, the Indiana transfer, and then Danzy. Good Lord, I felt like that team, if they can hit on that week in and week out, which we'll see. But one of the things that really jumped out to me was just rewatching that game. They dominated the line of scrimmage. Like, you, there's multiple clips I feel like on Twitter where they're just blasting guys off the ball. And that to me, I talked to an NFL scout that thought that there were 10 to 11 players from Alabama that could be drafted this next year. I can't believe that was the tape that we just watched. If I'm DeBoer, he's got to, you know what? I feel sorry for him in a way, because he can't eat out in Tuscaloosa. He's going to need someone. He's going to be like one of those old kings where you got to have someone taste the food before you, because I just can't believe they lost in that fashion. It'd be different if it was like a field goal game, but they got just bodied offensively, defensively. And honestly, I don't even know. I don't want to blame Ty Simpson, but I don't know if he's the solution. They might have to go to Austin Mack.
Yeah. And, you know, this is Keelan Mack, right? Or Keelan Russell is the guy that everyone loves, right? He's the five-star freshman.
Yeah.
I'd be curious if they go to him at some point. So they got some options down there. And look, the stat that I tweeted out and it got some run this weekend was, in 14 games at Alabama, Kalen DeBoer has now lost four games as a 14-plus point favorite. I mean, that's unfathomable when you think about 23.5-point favorite at Vanderbilt, 14-point favorite at Oklahoma, 16.5-point favorite against Michigan in the bowl game, and then they closed 14 against Florida State. And here's the thing, Colby. They got dominated in two of those games. Oklahoma beat the shit out of them, too, last November. And if they win that game, they're going to the playoffs. So, look, I am still a slight believer in Kalen DeBoer, but it's like, man, come on, dude. 4 out of 14 games you've lost as a 14-plus point favorite.
And you know what those games all have in common is that I was doing some fact checking on this yesterday. They did not rush for over 100 yards in those games. So like for whatever reason, he just loves to pass the ball. I know it's his background, I think, a little bit there with, you know, and the success he had with Penix and Hayner, you know, Penix at Washington and slash Indiana, and then Hayner at Fresno. But man, they got to be more physical, because go back to that Vanderbilt game last year. Like, Vanderbilt owned the line of scrimmage. That can't happen at Alabama. You know what I mean? Like, and then what they give up? What was that final number? I have it. I think Stewart's here. They gave up 230 yards of rushing offense to Florida State. You're going to get eaten alive in the SEC if you do not get a better rush defense and you do not commit to the run. I know Jam Miller was out, but I think you got to commit to the run a little bit more, and you got to be a little tougher as a team. And that starts in practice.
Three games away from a road trip to Georgia. Still have to play Tennessee, South Carolina, LSU, Oklahoma, and then Auburn. I mean, Auburn looked good in their season opening win too. They're at Baylor. I know Baylor got some late steam, and Auburn able to take care of business. You know, I want to jump to LSU because, you know, this was a game where we saw some late money come in on Clemson. I think they closed 4.5, might have even been a 5 out there. And watching that first half, I took some LSU in game. I think I got them at +6. I think you probably could have got a better number. And watching that first half, they bungled the end of the first half, not kicking the field goal. But man, you know, for me, what's interesting, at least from a couple of these teams, we mentioned Miami briefly. We could circle back to them with Heatherman coming in as their D coordinator. LSU's defense, like, Garrett Nussmeier made some baller plays, no doubt. And he's legit, and he's, you know, very well could be the number one overall pick. And I, you know, Aaron Anderson, I thought, made some really nice plays at wide receiver. Caden Durham made some, you know, good plays too. I'm not worried about Clemson's defense at all. I still think they're the real deal, and I think they very well could still win this conference. And they're still the favorite to do so. But LSU, man, I got to give them a lot of credit. That defense was flying around, and Harold Perkins, man, he's refound who he's supposed to be, because he is an absolute maniac out there.
Yeah, and I was surprised that they actually, you know, had fumbled essentially his skills the past couple of years. And Blake Baker, you know, for whatever reason, was able to figure out, hey, let's just let this guy be an athlete. You know, I remember this, you know, you can use this example, I think, a lot of times. I remember, I know we're from the DMV, but LeVar Arrington.
Oh, yeah.
I remember him under Norv Turner struggling, or was it, was it Turner or Spurrier? And then Schottenheimer came in, and Schottenheimer's just like, he was only there for like a year, but I think it was the best year of LeVar Arrington's career. He's like, no, we're not going to have him. Don't have him overthink this. Just go play football. He kind of used the Derek Thomas philosophy for hey, we have an elite athlete. We're just going to let him roam and do his thing. And I feel like there was comparisons there with Harold Perkins, as you saw. And really, honestly, man, I thought that was probably the most impressive win of the whole Saturday. I mean, Florida State's right there, but LSU being on the road in that environment, I'm pretty sold on them now. As far, I needed to see that, because I did see Brian Kelly, like, just he kind of was very confident in the offseason, more than normal. And now you can see why. I think, like, what, and that's another one that I think you can get over there. I think they're plus 550 to win the SEC championship right now. I think there's value in that right now, because I that defense looks awesome. Another thing is they committed to the run more. That's what I wanted to see a little bit, was for whatever reason, they just love passing the ball the past couple of years, when I thought, you know, they had good backs and a good O-line, and the O-line looked decent. The O-line looked decent considering, you know,
I had a lot of questions. I mean, we had Jimmy Ott on the show, and shout out to my guy, Jimmy, who was 1,000,000% right on first half full game under. I mean, that was the easiest bet that I made all weekend, thanks in part to Jimmy on the Saturday show. But he had questions. He's like, we might be rotating, we meaning LSU, 8 offensive linemen. I'm like, against that D line, you're going to rotate 8 offensive linemen? And to your point, Colby, they held up. They weren't amazing, but they held up, you know, and that's very encouraging there. And, you know, to kind of go back to initial theme here to start this conversation about the questions that some of these youngsters, whether it be Arch Manning, Ty Simpson, CJ Carr, et cetera, when you've got a dude like LSU, I mean, you're confident that you're going to take care of business. And he was, like, the numbers weren't amazing, but he was playing against arguably the best defense in the country and looked very, very good.
Oh, and a couple of those balls. I mean, I think I was more sold on this performance than anything in his career, even though I know the numbers don't light up the scoreboard there. But I'm convinced that I think he's probably the best quarterback in the nation this year. Like, after seeing some of those, the ball placement on a couple of those balls, I'm just like, that's why I honestly, you look at the SEC championship odds right now, and you're like, man, Texas is number one. Georgia's number two. Alabama is after LSU, but those are the top four. And there's one that just has just a huge quarterback advantage in the other three. Yeah, I like jumping in on LSU after that performance, because the schedule's kind of nice too. I mean, it's an SEC schedule, but I think, you know, it does have, I feel like their biggest games are in Baton Rouge, especially after you see Alabama not looking like Alabama. Now, obviously, Alabama destroyed them last year, but yeah, I'm kind of buying in to LSU more than I thought just a week ago. I think this team looked to me the most impressive out of anyone.
If you want to hold on to your butt special this week, you want to ride with me plus 38 boys from Ruston. That is a classic sandwich spot with Florida next week, and coming off of the high of beating Clemson. That is a hold your nose, feel the wind coming, and just grab something, because it could be 67-0 too. But we'll see if old BK runs it up against the Bulldogs as they come to town Saturday night.
Oh, sign me up. You know, 38. I haven't been the biggest fan of Sonny Cumbie, but I will say,
well, everyone's told me that Sonny Cumbie's like the number one hot seat guy coming into this year. I would say Trent Dilfer, but Sonny Cumbie did get a shutout win against Southeast Louisiana to open up the season there.
And they're not bad in the FCS, so, like, I'll take that. I don't know if you got eyes on Dilfer on oh my. Woo. If folks did not catch that game, Alabama State of the SWAC had a double-digit lead late in the third quarter of that game, and Dilfer was lucky to get out of there with a win.
Yeah. They very much were. We will discuss one of my one play that we gave out last week to close out the podcast. But Colby, I want to wrap things up here. Just kind of, you know, dealer's choice. You and I both talked about our affinity towards Coach Ken and San Jose State. I watched the majority of that game, and man, I just, the end of game execution really hurt me just watching that team. Now, I have a bet for them to make the Mountain West Championship game, which is still alive, even though they lost to Central Michigan. But, you know, trying to get a left-footed kicker to kick from the left hash just didn't really make sense to me at the end of that game, where they probably should have stolen a win away from Central Michigan. But how high amongst the disappointing performances were the Spartans for you in week one?
Well, I had a lot of money. Like I mentioned, the Alabama one to win.
That was a hit for both of us.
Oh man, in a 48-hour stretch, I was feeling so good after week zero when I kind of cleared the boy out. I was all over Ohio State. Then it's like, oh, Alabama, huh? Oh, San Jose State, huh? I am very concerned. I mean, like Walker Egitt, if you didn't catch, I know you were traveling, but in the first half, the interception in the end zone was about the worst pass and the worst decision. That was a very disappointing game. Credit to Matt Drinkel in Central Michigan for a great game plan, I thought. But San Jose State, in my opinion, that was more on them. They couldn't get out of their own way. And, they needed to commit to the run, because essentially that's what Drinkel's game plan was. They just they were dropping everybody back, and San Jose State running that spread and shred. Craig Stutzman, which I think he's a cutting edge coach, but I also think they were late to adapt. You saw them come out of the second half. They ran this backup quarterback like four or five straight plays on quarterback draws, and they got points. And then they went right back to Egitt, and I think they kind of dropped the ball there. And then obviously, I don't know what they were thinking with the kicking decisions there, like you were saying. You know, lining it up on the hash. This stuff really matters in college football. I know pro, you don't really have to worry about that, but you know,
you got a left-footed kicker, and you played like, if you recognize that they were, you know, once again, this was the late night Friday game, so everyone was watching it. San Jose State had no chance to cover, and there was actually late money that came in on the Spartans to I think push them up to around 14-point favorite. But if you got a left-footed kicker, you want to run towards the right hash mark, so he's just kind of pushing it as opposed to pulling it. And it was just bizarre to me that they had a chance to set up where their kicker could kick from, and they botched that situation.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's no excuse for that. And I think we both love Ken Niumatalolo.
Oh, he's one of the best. He does the, in my opinion, Colby, over his years at Navy, I mean, he's done the most with the least for a long, long time.
Yeah. But let me tell you, like, as much as I still think San Jose State can get to the championship game and maybe even win it, because I have my concerns with Boise, but I think this conference is a little more open than we think. I know UNLV got, you know, they're still, Mullen has been able to escape that Idaho State game, and then they look pretty impressive against what I think is a bad Sam Houston State team. But Fresno responded well against Georgia Southern. But a couple teams that I think there's incredible value on right now is Air Force. And I am buying stock. I took New Mexico plus 34.5 against Michigan. Jason Eck is an unbelievable head coach. If you watched that TCU game last night, you saw the star wideout for TCU was a kid from Idaho, where that, you know, he was developed by Jason Eck and his staff. They played Michigan tough, man. Like, I know they don't have the guys to beat Michigan, but that was a 10-point game with like what, 10 minutes left, 12 minutes left. And that, it, like, they were very impressive in that game. And as long as Jack Lane stays healthy, he kind of added a bunch of his Idaho guys and a bunch. They're kind of like an FCS all-star team. If you, Scottrey Humphrey from Montana State and a bunch of other guys, I think New Mexico is going to be a problem in this conference. Now, if you can find, because I know they've taken off to get to the championship game in a lot of books, but if you can find that, I don't think it's a terrible play, especially knowing all this other stuff going on. And the Air Force Falcons, I think, are one that could benefit from Boise, UNLV, and San Jose not looking like perhaps the teams we thought they were.
Yeah, Air Force, certainly a team that I know JBT was high on them when he wrote up the Mountain West for our college football guide. That's going to be a battle early September, late mid-September when Air Force hosts Boise State. And we'll see how Boise State bounces back against an Eastern Washington foe this week. All right, final one, Colby, from me to you. As we head into week two, are there any spots, any early bets, any overreactions you're looking to play on or against here in week two?
Yes. I mean, the one that already jumped out to me, and I went pretty heavy on it, is UTSA. I thought they were actually rather impressive for majority of that game. It's just A&M's, you know, line of scrimmage. They might have A&M might have the best. I mean, I think they're in contention for best offensive line in college football, and that wore them down eventually. But I am convinced that there is value on them against Texas State. I know Texas State dropped, like, that's the battle of I-35, I think it is. Texas State put up a 50 burger on Eastern Michigan, but Texas State kind of embarrassed them last year in San Marcos, ran it up. They're going to San Antonio. I think UTSA is the play. I think that they're flying under the radar. So I actually love taking the Roadrunners at home in that rivalry game. And another one that I am just terrified for Rich Rodriguez, Ohio. I watched that Ohio Rutgers game from start to finish. If Ohio doesn't bobble a punt that ends up getting blocked for a touchdown, Ohio, I think, would have beat Rutgers. And I was we know Rutgers' defense, and Greg Schiano's got a good defense. And Parker Navarro, I was really, really impressed with I'm fascinated. He's a group of five quarterback after that performance. I was like, how has nobody called this guy up? I think they're going to beat West Virginia. If you watch that West Virginia Robert Morris game, that was 10-3 at halftime. And Robert Morris, not a very good FCS team. So I think that game's in Athens,
yeah.
Ohio, too. Guess what's on deck? The backyard brawl, where Rich Rod, you know, that's the game that basically cost them from the national championship. He hasn't played that thing since. So I think Ohio is going to beat West Virginia in Athens. I just think they're a better football team right now. And Parker Navarro is the best player on the field in that game. I'm all over those Bobcats. So that's two that I've already highlighted right there.
Love it. UTSA -4.5 right now. Ohio, only a 3-point dog. Interesting. Only three at home. Makes you think. Done a little bit there. Colby, you're the man. Much appreciated. Once again, the college experience, part of the SGP family there. And you're with Ryan and Sean every Friday night on VSiN, right?
Yeah, every Friday night talking college football on VSiN, and check out Sports Gambling. And I'm also on their actual podcast as well.
There you go.
Podcast. So yeah, appreciate you.
I need to know what's up with the Hokies here. You know, Kramer's talking all this stuff about, oh, it's such a great atmosphere. Is it going to be like, I want to bet them this week against Vanderbilt in a revenge spot from last year. You're at home, enter Sandman, all that nonsense. But that offense looked terrible. Kyron Drones, he ain't it, man. But I don't know. I can't decide if this is a buy low spot or just stay the hell away with the Hokies.
And what Drones completed, I think it was 42% of his passes. That was the lowest in his 21 starts at Virginia Tech. And my thing is Brent Pry. I have huge issues with Brent Pry. I think every year I actually think it's one of the worst coach teams in the nation every year. Like,
the defense actually, I thought, played well. And like, I had Hokies +8, and I'm like, oh, we might get there. And just, I had the offense just said nothing, man.
I had it too, because he's what, 1-12 in one score games in his career at Virginia Tech. And I was like, well, he's in a lot of one score games, so give me the 8. But I think the thing that stood out to me most though is you know, that, go back to that punt. That was what really changed that game. That punt return, the play before, they punted and there was a penalty for illegal formation, and Beamer, classic Beamer ball, his dad, obviously a legend at that, you know, says, no, repunt. We don't want the 5 yards right now, or we'll take the 5 yards, but repunt. And that was the difference. I thought that's what cracked that thing open. And it's just little penalties like that. And that's been the story of Brent Pry's exact tenure in Blacksburg. And for whatever reason, he's a nice, you know, I hate to say it because he's a nice guy. I've interviewed him before, but I just feel like they're underprepared and they're always, you know, making dumb penalties at the wrong times. And that's been the whole story the whole time. So I know that the home environment's incredible, but I'll take Diego Pavia and that offense, I just trusted a little bit more than anything with Virginia Tech. You saw Rutgers go in there and push them around a year ago.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Hey, Colby, always appreciate you, man.
Thanks for having me, Tim. Pleasure, man.
This broadcast of VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast is presented by Kahala, the original Aloha shirt brand. Founded in Honolulu in 1936, Kahala has been at the heart of island style for nearly 90 years. Next year marks their 90th anniversary, a celebration of timeless craftsmanship, bold design, and Hawaii's rich cultural story. Most of Kahala's iconic Aloha shirts are still made right here in Hawaii, using original prints and time-honored techniques that showcase the beauty of the islands. But Kahala also innovates with modern styles, offering stretchy performance shirts, cooling polos designed for golf, and comfortable shorts built for every adventure. Discover their full collection and heritage at kahala.com. Shop their full collection once again at kahala.com. That's kahala.com. Visit one of their six stores across Hawaii and follow them on Instagram at Kahala. Kahala, celebrating 90 years of Aloha and a proud sponsor of VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, wrapping things up here on the podcast. Thanks again to Colby Dant for pinch hitting for Adam Burke. Adam will be back next week. Adam will be with us every Monday episode. Obviously a unique week with the Monday Night Football situation there. I wanted to make sure we had eyes on Chapel Bill. I guess we didn't necessarily need that. But TCU gets the win. The over does hit as well. It's funny, we almost landed right on the first half and full game number. First half was 27 right before kickoff, and that's what we had, 20-7 at halftime. And then I thought we had a chance to get 48-7 or 41-14, which would have landed 55, but we got another late touchdown there. Hey, I just want to give a shout out to one of our special sponsors that helped us so much on our trip out to Hawaii over week zero. That is the Sheraton Waikiki Beach Resort. Vivid by day, vibrant by night. Experience the energy of Waikiki at the Sheraton Waikiki Beach Resort. If you caught it, we had a special broadcast of the VSiN College Football Tailgate Show on that Saturday, live from the 30th floor. It was an amazing, amazing view. And Dara and her team just went above and beyond for us. So it's nestled right on the world famous Waikiki Beach, just steps from shopping, dining, and Oahu's best attractions. The Sheraton Waikiki is your getaway to paradise. Relax at two stunning outdoor pools, including the Edge Infinity Pool, the longest oceanfront infinity pool in North America. Savor island-inspired food and cocktails and retreat to newly reimagined guest rooms with the Sheraton Signature Sleep Experience, private lanais, and sweeping ocean views. Also, you don't want to miss on their newest activity, floating yoga in the Edge Pool. We were going to try to get humans to do that, but we just didn't have enough time on that Saturday. With sunrise and glow sessions, you'll find there. Sheraton Waikiki, thank you. A proud sponsor of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. All right, we'll be back on Wednesday. As mentioned, Wednesdays with Wes Reynolds. We'll look into some situational spots. A couple that I just wanted to eye up here real quickly, and we'll just run through these. Situational spots, you've got Georgia Tech off of the big win over Colorado. They host Clemson next week. I should have asked Colby this because he has a very good feel on FCS programs. What is that number going to look like against FCS Gardner-Webb? But certainly one to keep an eye on there. Does Georgia Tech kind of take their foot off the gas after, boy, very fortunate cover for anyone who had Georgia Tech lay in the chalk there, or tough beat if you had Colorado. Mention this to Colby. I did take 38 with Louisiana Tech. Hold my nose. Come on, Sonny Cumbie. Just keep it close against LSU. What a spot for Louisiana Tech to go into Death Valley catching 38. LSU, of course, coming off of the massive win over Clemson. Next week, they host Florida. It is a primo sandwich spot. That said, we thought South Dakota was a primo sandwich spot a week ago. I picked the wrong Dakota. It was North Dakota we needed to back, who almost beat Kansas State, not South Dakota, who lost 55-7. But Iowa, Iowa State, definitely a game of interest this week. Duke, Illinois, can't wait to talk about that one. I think I could will find myself on the Blue Devils. I think UConn, Syracuse is an interesting one. UConn, big game hunting there. Is Virginia Tech in a buy low spot? We just talked about that with Colby. I really like Mississippi State in this spot against Arizona State. How about last year? Cam Scataboo ran for 262. It was his coming out party of sorts against Mississippi State. Revenge in Stark Vegas, night game, could be interesting. And then lastly, I'm going to ask for sure Wes about this. So Wes was all over Old Dominion last week. Great call by him. We've actually seen early money come in on Indiana. Kirk Cignetti, after the 24-14 win over Old Dominion, said, quote, it was pedestrian at best, a pedestrian win at best. So we'll see if old bully Cignetti comes out and lays it on the Owls of Kennesaw State. I wanted to wrap with this because last Wednesday's podcast, I opened up with a situation that I really liked with UL Monroe taking on St. Francis. And St. Francis, a program that is transitioning from D1 to D3. Essentially, their whole two deep transferred out. Their running backs, their wide receivers, offensive line, a lot of defensive players all left the program. And I laid 23.5. We were talking about it on the show on Wednesday. And the only book that was out there, so it might have been a little unfair in my defense here for you guys, if you didn't have access to FanDuel, I was able to have someone put in the bet for me, and then it went up like crazy. So I was watching Bad Beats on Monday night with Van Pelt, and watching this game unfold, it was very frustrating because I had 23.5. They score a touchdown and make it 23-0, and then the extra point gets blocked, and you're thinking, all right, we're screwed. They score another touchdown. They get another extra point blocked. So it's 29-0, and that ends up being the final score. And to be honest, once it was 29-0 and UL Monroe got another stop, I kind of turned my eyes away from it. If you saw Bad Beats, if you laid the worst of it at 31, you had two blocked extra points, and then a wide open touchdown just dropped right into the hands of a wide receiver from UL Monroe, and they wouldn't go on to score later. And I'm just thinking to myself, oh my goodness, like a wide open touchdown. I believe it was, I want to say to Landon Graves. I'm not sure. Landon Graves might've been the quarterback at the time, but a wide open touchdown drop there at the end of the game. So here we are. Bad Beats are back. And thankfully, if you laid it early enough, you were able to get the win. But as Matt Eumanns likes to say, don't expect bad teams to do good things. And UL Monroe, I'm going to go ahead and say, not the best of programs. And they will be taking on Alabama this week. So we'll see if Alabama takes out some frustration on the Warhawks of UL Monroe. All right, that's going to do it for the podcast. Thanks again to Colby Dant. We'll be back on Wednesday with another episode. Please continue to rate, review, and subscribe. Like I said, to open the podcast, if you guys are still listening this late in, you're true OGs. But let's keep it rolling, man. Being in the top 80 all week, really didn't expect that. Last year, we got into the top 200 a couple times, which was amazing. But the fact that the first week of the college football season, we made this meteoric rise, hopefully we can continue the momentum and keep it rolling. And once again, the Thursday episode, which the numbers were insanity, will be on YouTube as well, at VSIN Live there on YouTube with myself and Matt Eumanns. So Wednesday episode, Wes Reynolds, Brett Ciancia, Pick Six Previews. That'll be your Wednesdays and then Thursdays with Matt Eumanns. All right, that's going to do it. I'm Tim Murray. Thanks to Ryan Hunter, as always, for putting this podcast together. We'll talk to you later this week right here on the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast.